This podcast is sponsored by Oppenheimer Funds. Oppenheimer Funds offers one of the most comprehensive retirement income planning programs in the industry. Visit www.transition10.com today to learn more. Oppenheimer Funds are distributed by Oppenheimer Funds Distributor Incorporated. Oppenheimer Funds Incorporated and Oppenheimer Funds Distributor Incorporated are not affiliated with Morningstar Advisor.
Welcome to Benefits Update. This is Natalie Choate. It's August and everybody's away at the beach. This is the time of year I like to cover the questions that I don't know the answer to. If you know the answer to any of these questions, please email me and be prepared to cite your authority because I sure can't find any. Here's the first stumper. Husband dies and leaves his IRA to wife. Wife rolls over the money into her own IRA. So far, so good. We all know about the spousal rollover and what a terrific deal it is for the surviving spouse to roll over plans she inherited from the deceased spouse into the surviving spouse's own IRA. Now, wife remarries. She names husband number two as her beneficiary of this rollover IRA she created with money inherited from husband number one. When wife dies, can husband number two roll this account over again into his own IRA? And then he remarries and leaves it to his new wife, and she rolls it over again to her own IRA? There's nothing in the code or regulations that I can find that prevents multiple spousal rollovers of the same account. So apparently, you could have a chain of spousal rollovers continuing forever with the same money, assuming the proper sequence of marriages, deaths, and rollovers. Here's another one. Can a living client transfer the ownership of his IRA into a grantor trust? A client might want to do this for a variety of reasons, such as creditor protection, concern about potential disability, or tax-motivated estate planning. Under the so-called grantor trust sections of the tax code, also known as subchapter J, if an individual places assets in a trust but retains certain rights and powers over that trust, the individual is treated for income tax purposes as if he still owned the trust assets directly. The trust is essentially ignored as a separate entity. So some planners assume, therefore, that transferring ownership of your IRA into a grantor trust would be a non-taxable event and wouldn't affect the IRA's qualified status because the trust is the grantor's alter ego and the grantor would be treated as if he still owned the IRA personally. I actually think that that conclusion is correct in certain circumstances, namely, if and only if, under the terms of the trust, there is no possibility that distributions could be made during the participant's lifetime to someone other than the participant. If the trust is irrevocable and would allow or require IRA funds to be paid to someone other than the participant during his or her lifetime, then I believe there's a substantial risk that that IRA would be disqualified, even if the IRA is a 100% grantor trust under subchapter J. Unfortunately, I can't cite any authority for that right now because there is no case or ruling or other authority one way or the other on the subject of a lifetime transfer of your IRA to a grantor trust. We do have at least two private letter rulings, though, in which beneficiaries were allowed to transfer inherited IRAs to irrevocable grantor trusts for their own benefit without triggering income taxes. So that's a clue that this is something that may be doable. But note, in those successful private letter rulings, which involved, in one case, a disabled beneficiary, in another case, a minor beneficiary, the IRS specifically noted that no one other than the disabled or minor beneficiary himself could receive distributions from the trust during the beneficiary's lifetime. That's why I think a lifetime transfer by the participant to his own grantor trust should also be successful if there's no possibility of distributions to someone other than the participant during his life. Another area of mystery is the subject of ownership of life insurance inside an IRA. The code provides that no part of an IRA's funds may be invested in life insurance. That's about as clear and simple a statement as you can find anywhere in the tax code. Yet some people find it ambiguous. There are some folks who say that this only means the IRA can't hold life insurance on the participant's life, and it's fine for the IRA to invest in life insurance on somebody else's life, so-called investor-owned life insurance, or IOLI. If it's okay for an IRA to hold life insurance on somebody other than the participant, I'd really like to see the authority for that conclusion. And while we're at it, what about indirect ownership of life insurance? Suppose an IRA owns shares in a limited partnership, and one asset of the partnership is a life insurance contract on the life of the IRA participant. Does that violate Section 408A3, the prohibition on an IRA investing in a life insurance contract? There's no answer to that question at the present time. We have regulations that do look through IRA-owned entities for certain purposes, such as unrelated business taxable income and prohibited transactions. But so far, the IRS has not issued any look-through rules for life insurance held in an IRA-owned entity. I wouldn't want to be the first to try it, but maybe your client would. Finally, here's a question I think even the IRS doesn't know the answer to. Suppose Dad dies in August of 2008, and he leaves his IRA to daughter as beneficiary. Dad died after he started taking minimum required distributions, and at his death, he had not yet gotten around to taking out the minimum required distribution for 2008. Let's say it was $1,000. Well, we all know the beneficiary must take out that required distribution for the year of death sometime before December 31st, 2008, or else there'll be a 50% penalty. So, based on these facts, we're going to say daughter, as the beneficiary, is required to withdraw the $1,000 year of death required distribution that Dad failed to take before he died. Or is she? Suppose daughter does nothing at all with that IRA in 2008. Then in 2009, she disclaims the entire IRA. As a result of her qualified disclaimer, the account passes to the contingent beneficiary. Let's say that's son. A disclaimer is effective to change the designated beneficiary, effective retroactively to the date of death. So as a result of daughter's qualified disclaimer, we now have a situation where son is deemed to have owned this IRA since the moment of Dad's death in August of 2008. Well, remember, nobody has yet taken this $1,000 minimum distribution for 2008, and Dad died before he could take it, and daughter disclaimed, so it looks as though son owes the 50% penalty for failure to take the required distribution because he's the only beneficiary of the account. And yet, in the year 2008, he actually had no legal access whatsoever to the account because daughter hadn't disclaimed yet, so he couldn't have taken the distribution in the calendar year 2008. Daughter didn't disclaim until 2009. Well, we may have to wait a long time for the IRS to unravel that one, and don't call me with you if you have the situation because I sure don't know the answer. That's my list of summer stumpers. And summer's almost over, so it's time for me to start getting ready for the fall seminar season. I hope to see you out on the circuit, and if you have any more stumpers, please send them along to me for my collection. From Morningstar Advisor, this is Natalie Choate.
Today's podcast was sponsored by Oppenheimer Funds. Visit www.transition10.com to learn more about Oppenheimer Funds' valuable retirement income planning tools. Oppenheimer Funds are distributed by Oppenheimer Funds Distributor Incorporated. Oppenheimer Funds Incorporated and Oppenheimer Funds Distributor Incorporated are not affiliated with Morningstar Advisor.